Hello and welcome to RHAP's coverage of Big Brother Australia VIP. I'm your host, Sarah Carradine, and I'm podcasting today from the lands of the Gadigal people of the Eora Nation. Sovereignty was never ceded. This always was and always will be Aboriginal land. And I'm here with vivacious, interesting ponytail, Amy Chan. Hello, Amy.
Good morning, Sarah. I am podcasting to you from Wiradjuri land. This is a very important podcast because it is our penultimate podcast about Big Brother AU VIP, which stands for Very Inconspicuous Philanthropy. I'm very excited to talk to you about the finale and everything that happened with Loki Toki. I am owning that. I put it out on Twitter. That's mine. Don't touch.
Well, it's interesting you say penultimate podcast because, in fact, we do have an exciting announcement at the end of the episode. Your voting lines are open throughout this podcast. You can vote for what you think that exciting surprise might be. Stay tuned. As always, this is a spoiler-filled recap of the finale week of Big Brother Australia VIP. So if you haven't watched and you want to watch before listening to us, hop off and come back. Otherwise, let us take you by the hand and tell you everything that happened in the final two episodes.
Yeah, so I think to call this a finale is a strange use of the word, Sarah, because a finale sort of implies that you're building up to some sort of crescendo and then a climax in the season. And I think we would resoundingly agree with the whole of social media that this was unfortunately a bit of an anti-climax. After really fun and, you know, a season that was kind of silly, didn't take itself too seriously, I think in the end we actually ended up with a little bit of a flat finale, particularly that last episode last night just felt a little bit flat and not as fun and a bit too full of recaps of things we've already just seen at the end of the series. What are your thoughts?
Yes, I wonder if it was the sheer length of the two episodes. I mean, it couldn't quite have been an email, but it could have been one episode. Last night's finale was an hour and 40 minutes, of which about 10 minutes was new material.
Yeah, it's a shame. I wonder why they didn't actually just condense all of that into the Monday night episode and just keep it as one concise episode. I think Monday night probably could have done with a bit of an edit in itself, and then they could have just added that last 10 minutes of them announcing the winner. That could have been, I suppose they needed the 24 hours for people to vote, but it did feel like it was a whole lot of filler last night.
Yes, of course, there is the time to vote. When you have a public vote, you can't expect people to immediately jump on their phones. You and I certainly didn't, and I'm sure a lot of fans jumped on their phones to vote straight away. But, in fact, the voting was still open throughout last night's episode. We're saying last night, as we're recording this, it's Wednesday the 24th of November, the day after the finale. I would imagine there are some pretty epic hangovers around and about today.
Yes, I would imagine the RHAP Survivor community in WA was very active last night. I saw some shenanigans happening online. Somehow a creeping jumper or T-shirt ended up on a famous statue somewhere in Perth. So I think there are a lot of sore heads amongst our friends in WA this morning.
So let's just jump into the chronology. So the episode 10, Monday night's episode, is the aftermath of Tom's eviction. They're down to the final five, it must be said, for the second time. They're down to the final five. It's their second to last day, and Imogen says there's definitely a buzz in the hotel. She couldn't have believed that she would get this far. A year ago she felt worthless, and this is something that you and I have commented on throughout this season, is her vulnerability, her explanation of her own insecurities, where she's come from and where she feels she has reached. So again, you know, such an amazing job of Imogen really showing us part of her true self. I won't say her whole true self. It is a reality TV show, but I feel she has been quite genuine.
Oh, yeah, look, apart from the Toki win, because he was my favourite and I announced that very early in this podcast, this was actually my favourite storyline of this week, was Imogen. the coming of Imogen, the growing of Imogen, and the building of Imogen's confidence. I really loved how we started with her waking up, referring to herself as a gremlin, talking about how she feels worthless, but Big Brother has given her confidence. And then talking about how now she feels she can get rid of this bad girl facade that she has been carrying around with her. We really see her multiple times in the episode break down and talk about how her breakup with her ex was kind of losing everything, how she's had to pour her life into her animals because she can't trust people and the way people have used her because of her association with Kyle Sanderlands, and how now finally putting herself in this situation where her social anxiety has been exacerbated, having to do it on her own and rely on herself to get her through this difficult situation, which is being filmed 24/7 to be aired on primetime television in front of the whole country, she has finally found confidence in herself, and she trusts herself and she feels worthwhile and like she's worth something. And I thought that was really an amazing story. And I was really sort of rooting for her actually to get to the final three by the end of Monday night's episode, because I just felt she had come so far and it was so amazing to see this whole other side to her and this realization and this growth. And good on you, Imogen. We love you on this podcast. I think it was an amazing journey you went on, and I'm hoping to see a lot more of her in the future.
Yes, I mean, we absolutely love her. And for anyone who's thinking, oh, well, if you are so insecure, if you do feel have such a low opinion of yourself, why on earth would you go on this show? She addresses that. She says it's literally the only reason she's on the show is to publicise her charity. And she is incredibly passionate about that. And I think that's what got her through.
Yeah, absolutely. And in my notes here, right at the top, Sarah, I've got all in capital letters, finally, charities. This is the first episode, episode 10 in the series, where we actually start to hear in any kind of substantial detail about any charities apart from basically Luke and Ellie's charity. Yeah, it's, when I said earlier, very inconspicuous philanthropy, it was a very weird season in terms of how the charities were really not addressed. I think that had they spent more time promoting the charities and talking about the charities, it would have added another layer to the show. Maybe we would have understood a little bit more about Imogen's character earlier on, because you would see this vulnerable side to the VIPs. And it's a shame that they waited so long to really use the platform to give publicity to these really worthwhile causes.
Yes, and you'd have to go away and find out for yourself how to donate to any of these charities of any of the 12 VIPs. That information is not certainly readily available on any of the Channel 7 pages that I saw. If I'm wrong, please at me and let me know. Ellie proposes a final three to the women and they all agree, but clearly this is not going to last. As privately, Ellie tells Josh she doesn't appreciate that her exit was coordinated by Jess. She's going to get Jess out. Josh in the diary room says he's going to keep Ellie by his side and cut her off from the other women. The other women, especially Jess, are talking about how they want to get rid of Ellie. So this is a very uneasy and untrue alliance being proposed here by the three women.
Yeah, they're very much circling each other, aren't they, at this stage of the game? They are. Everyone's playing nice, pretending that we're going to have a girls' alliance, but I think the only one who's actually considering that is Imogen, who hasn't quite made up her mind whether she trusts Ellie or not. And there again, we're seeing that softer side of Imogen, I think, where she, you know, is really driven by her emotions. She has a friendship with Ellie outside of the house, so she's not sure where the line is to be crossed between playing the game and the real friendship outside of the game. But very much Jess and Ellie do not trust each other. They have no intention of honouring a final three of the girls, and that's pretty clear quite early on.
I think so. Do you have anything before we get to the nomination challenge?
No, let's go straight to the challenge.
All right, so there are Walk of Fame stars for these people for our final challenge. At the end of a balance beam, there's a wobbly star, and on each arm of the star is a circle waiting for a ball to be put on. So you pick up your ball, you go along your balance beam, you get onto your wobbly star, you put the ball on the arm, and then you go back and you try to do that 5 times, and if you do, you're going to win the challenge.
Yeah, so this is, again, Ellie is still carrying on with the facade of the Girls' Alliance here. There is a lot of smack talk. There's a lot of her calling out the boys, saying she's going to get the boys. They're going down. The boys are sort of laughing awkwardly. They're not sure whether to believe her or not. And when Ellie eventually wins the challenge in quite a landslide, she's shouting, "Lick it, lick it," and looking at the boys. That was a strange choice of victory speech.
Yes, it's my new phrase, lick it. Jess says, "Thank God," which might just be because the challenge is over rather than that Ellie won. Big Brother asks Jess how she feels, and Jess says, "It's a good win for the girls." So everyone's keeping up this front, pretty much sure that everybody knows that everybody's going to cut each other's throats at this point.
Yeah, it doesn't come as any surprise, really, that once Ellie goes into the diary room, she actually ends up nominating the two girls. She nominates Jess because Jess orchestrated her blindside, and so that's a revenge vote. And then Imogen just ends up being nominated, I think, by default, because Ellie's still feeling quite betrayed. She feels like Imogen lied to her, was in on the Jess vote, and even though she wasn't, I think Ellie wants to split up that power couple of the two girls. Do you think this is a good move, Sarah? I feel like Ellie potentially should have kept the girls because she would have had a surer win if she had voted out one of the boys here, and she would definitely have had a surer path to the final three. What are your thoughts?
Oh, absolutely. I think it's unfortunate that the feeling of betrayal over the Jess vote led her to be very blinkered about getting rid of the girls, making a final three agreement with Luke and Josh. Josh, although we don't see him doing it, certainly his intention has been to feed that feud. And we'll see later, he gets very worried when Imogen and Ellie seem to come to some sort of rapprochement. I think the fact that nobody for one moment ever over 10 episodes nominated Luke is extraordinary. This was her chance to nominate Luke and Josh. And even though it may not have been Luke that went, it certainly would have cut the power of the men. I think she was afraid that she wouldn't make it to the final three. What do you think?
I don't know. I can't see how she would have thought that she was going to make it to the final three with those boys. I mean, the boys never really demonstrated any kind of solidarity in their alliance with her. So I don't know why she would necessarily trust them more than the girls. I feel like it was just an emotional vote done because she felt betrayed and hurt, all understandable. But I think for me, the smarter move would have been to vote out one of the boys, keep the girls, because the girls are not going to take a boy to the final three with them, I wouldn't have thought, particularly if you got rid of Luke. I can't see the two girls taking Josh to the final three. So that puts Ellie firmly in the final three. And then I think from an outsider's perspective, the audience is far more likely to vote for Ellie because she's a strong strategic player. She's won lots of challenges. I think the two girls would be seen as goats. So to me, I don't really see the strategy and why you would bring the boys with you to the end. But, yeah, it would be interesting to get some sort of insight into exactly what her thought process was there.
Yes, I mean, it is a pressure cooker, and I think the antipathy certainly in the house between Ellie and Jess must have been quite strong, although they have since on the outside. And, in fact, as Jess goes, they make a promise to each other to see each other on the outside and sort it out. So I'm sure it was just within the game. But it's interesting. So Ellie nominates Jess for revenge, and then Jess is furious at being nominated, so she's now going to get her revenge on Ellie. But it's like, but Jess, Ellie's getting her revenge on you. You were the one that nominated her in the first place. It's just got all a little bit tangled and all a little bit pressure cooker. And for Ellie, I think this is the wrong nominations, because taking Luke and Josh, quite apart from anything else, they are her competitors in the nomination competitions and challenges in a way that the girls aren't, although Jess has won a competition before.
Yeah, I think that's right. I think particularly the way we see kind of Jess then sort of talking in circles for the next few hours until she is voted out, where she keeps talking about there's gameplay and there's being a liar. Jess can't actually even clearly communicate exactly what is happening in these circumstances. So I think that where you should get to a final three with her, Ellie would easily steamroll over Jess, because I think, Jess is now also caught up in being confused about the difference between friendship and gameplay and lying and strategy, and I think she loses a lot of credit, not credit, but I think that the other players recognise when Jess starts to go down the path that that doesn't really make any sense, and it kind of undermines a little bit of that strategic nous that she showed us last week.
Yes, I think she's stung by being nominated, which is interesting because she had every intention of nominating Ellie should she have got there. When she pitches to Luke as to why she should stay over Imogen, she pitches Imogen hasn't won a challenge yet. Well, this is absolutely the wrong pitch, because if you are Josh, you want to keep the one that hasn't won a challenge rather than the one that has. I think that she, yes, there's a sort of spiral, again, is slightly the wrong word, but as you say, she talks about liars and lying and what's a game and what's a lie, but just the whole thing is the game. Everything in the game is the game. But my love from last week has not diminished. I still love her, but as Imogen even says, I love Jess, but I don't want to give up my seat for her. I love Jess too, but having been nominated, I think she's the obvious one to vote for.
Yeah, absolutely. She is the big threat. She has proven that she can win challenges. She's proven that she will make a big move and she will flip if she feels threatened. And so for that reason, she has to go. And part of what I did like and did appreciate about the Imogen nomination was we got to really see Imogen just completely open up. That conversation she has with Josh, where she's pleading for her charity because her charity is her whole life. She feels that she lost everything after her breakup a couple of years ago, and so it means everything to her. I really felt that that was quite a beautiful insight into Imogen and who she is deep down and what she's really feeling. So I thought that was probably, for me, the highlight of the episode.
Absolutely, and Josh feels that he really hasn't ever got to know her. And in this one conversation where she tells Josh that TV shows, being on television, scares the shit out of her, For Josh, it's the same with his social anxiety. She says, I've never been proud of myself for anything except for this charity, which means the world to me. And I think at that point, I mean, Josh was wavering a bit. I think Luke pretty much knew he was going to vote for Jess because Jess had played a better game. And so it's obviously for a strategist like Luke is the one to vote out. I think this is the moment where Josh wants to keep Imogen. If they'd each voted for different people, I suppose it would have come down to Ellie. I thought for a moment that Josh was going to sort of abrogate his decision-making there, knowing that Luke was going to vote for Jess and that he would vote for Imogen and leave it up to Ellie to be the one to drop the hammer. But I think this conversation with Imogen and his understanding of their connection, as well as probably Luke's, as we've said before, very subtle but very strong persuasive powers, means that it is a unanimous eviction of Jess, who comes in the most outrageous and ridiculous and wonderful white Princess Leia dress, backless with cutouts and underboob. I just loved it. It's not going to get my Fashions on the Field commendation, but it gets a heart commendation from me here. In a day where she probably knew she was going to go home in that dress.
Yes, yeah, stunning dress. I also actually really loved Imogen's purple disco sequin number, the one shoulder and the high pony. I also thought that was gorgeous. To your point, I actually don't think it would have been a smart move for Josh to split the vote and let Ellie be the decider. I think he needed to show solidarity with Luke. Because if Luke was to win the next challenge, he wants to be brought to the final three with Luke. So I think it was actually crucial for Josh to show he was aligned with Luke here. And I don't think that voting for Imogen and splitting the vote away from his strongest alliance would have been a clever option. I think he did exactly the right play here.
No, I absolutely agree. I just thought that I thought for a moment that that's what he was contemplating doing, just leaving it to Ellie. But yes, much more important to show his solidarity with Luke and make sure that he gets to the final three. This is where Jess says there's gameplay, then there's straight factual lying, which I quite love. So I'm going to use lick it and I'm going to use factual lying as much as I can in this next week.
Yeah, exactly. So Jess is out, and I think it's quite interesting that you see Ellie is already sort of grooming the viewers, I think, in a way, where she's always using this language about how she made the power move by splitting the girls up. She has been the strategic person in the house. She is the one who has understood where the power lies in amongst the housemates. So I thought that was kind of interesting that Ellie seems to be really the only one who overtly articulates what her strategy has been, what her gameplay has been, and seems to almost be playing a little bit to the camera to try and convince us why we should vote for her. I'm surprised we don't actually start to see more of that from this point onwards in the game.
Yeah, I mean, smart of her. Unfortunately, for anyone who's holding on, hoping that we have some inside running as far as numbers are, we don't know what the split of numbers are, the percentage or the votes. We just know the winner at the end. I would have liked to have seen some numbers, or they may come out later, and if they do, we'll certainly tweet them out. So we have a final four feast. Everyone cheers. It's the last night in the hotel. There have been hugs and tears and cheers. Imogen's in the diary room. She feels grateful. She feels proud.
Yeah, and so then we get this really nice sequence where Imogen apologises to Ellie for the meltdown in the backyard that happened a couple of episodes ago when they found out that Ellie and Dane were returning back to the house. And I thought this was a really lovely, mature way for the two women to interact and acknowledge what had happened, that Imogen is able to express to Ellie that it was just a moment of vulnerability. She probably was a little bit tipsy after several champagnes, and she was reacting to the twist and the unexpected rather than it being a personal attack at Ellie. And that Ellie, on the flip side, is able to understand that Imogen was very vulnerable. She might have felt very exposed. I think Ellie knows that Imogen doesn't necessarily process emotions in the same way as other people, and that everybody's different. And so she's able to understand that and forgive that. And I thought that was a really lovely thing that we often don't see on reality TV. Reality TV is often focused on the fights and the nastiness. We rarely see the reconciliation and the kindness and the forgiveness. So I found that very heartening from both women.
Yes, absolutely. And also in terms of the edit, they actually give this conversation and the diary rooms about it from the two women quite a lot of time. They use quite a lot of this discussion. So we're sort of in on it and we can see what's happening between the two women. And we're not the only ones who see what's happening between the two women. Luke is keeping an eye on them from the kitchen as he's sort of wiping the same part of the bench over and over again as he keeps his eye on them and worries that they're getting too chummy.
Yeah, exactly. So you can see Luke still one of the biggest strategists in the game, very much has his finger on the pulse in terms of what relationships are forming where, how dynamics are shifting, and, you know, minute to minute knows exactly where he stands in amongst all of that, which leads us into the challenge that Luke says he must win in order to guarantee himself a spot in the final three.
Do you think he was really in danger at that point?
Looking back, I don't think he was actually ever in danger. What is that, hindsight is 20/20? When you look back, he was never even nominated once. He never sat in the chair. So I don't think he was ever under threat. I think everybody in the house thought that he was their number one, and so I think he would have been fine no matter which way. But I think a smart player is one who doesn't sit back on their laurels, who recognises that as soon as they're starting to feel safe, they're probably not safe, they're probably being played, and so he's constantly playing the game every minute that he's awake in the house. And so I think that that's why you see he's constantly trying to set up insurance policies and make sure that he puts himself in the best possible position to control the politics of all the people around him.
Yes, I mean, I think he quite rightly knows that if Josh wins, Josh will take him as a sort of a ride or die. Josh is a loyalist. I think that he and Ellie have been at odds in the past but have come together, so he might feel the most smoke perhaps from Ellie. And with Imogen, he just may not know where he stands. So, yes, he does feel he has to win this last Final Four challenge. So here they have to leap off a platform and smash through a wall and drop a weight and smash through that and get a key and find the right key out of 10 to unlock a padlock and then fill water from a barrel into a track. And then from the track, the water fills up containers and the containers have balls in them. And then the balls come out of the containers. And then you pick up the balls and then you throw the balls through a series of angled targets to drop it into the, honestly, I was exhausted just writing my notes. It was fun to watch. If you didn't worry too much about following all the actions they were supposed to make, it was actually very fun to watch.
Yeah, I thought it was hilarious how at one stage Imogen was stuck way back at the second part of this multi-step challenge, and all the others were right at the end doing the last bit. And she calls out, "I'll just be here, guys. You just get that ball in." But in the end, she actually manages to catch up with them. And like a traditional survivor challenge, you know, the end essentially comes down to the beginning is all physical, and at the end it really does come down to, you know, a puzzle. And essentially this puzzle is them trying to figure out how to get these ping pong balls into the containers, and, you know, it all kind of levels up towards the end. She, you know, there really isn't that massive gap between Imogen and everybody else. What I really liked about this challenge, it was fun, was you didn't know who was going to win. So it initially seemed like, you know, Luke was going to take it out, but then the others sort of caught up to him, and then you weren't sure where it was going to go. We know that Ellie is always a serious contender when it comes to things. We know that Josh will fight it out. I always find it interesting as well to watch different players and the way they tackle these challenges. Like, for instance, with Luke, you can see him trying things, watching the other players. He looks at what their strategy is. He tries something different. So it's interesting to see the different ways in which different players kind of adapt, whereas other players might just keep trying the same thing over and over, even if it's not working. But ultimately, in the end, Josh wins. And this is quite touching because I think the boost to his confidence of being the one to kind of get through and take this challenge is really heartening to see. For somebody who has such severe social anxiety and such self-doubt, you know, he's proven to himself that he can do what he set out to do.
I think that you're right. Luke is very adaptive and flexible. Josh's way of getting the ping pong balls through to hit the six targets before it went in was literally to repeat the same thing over and over again. It's just that it did work, that he got his two balls in before Luke got his second ball in. But I like those challenges. I like those long challenges that end up with, and then you get to the end. Now with that adrenaline running, you have to do something that requires concentration, calmness and manual dexterity, whether it be a puzzle or, in this case, a very light ping pong ball being thrown in a very particular way so that it bounces backwards and forwards between six targets and then falls into a bucket at the end. So I like this challenge a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So Josh has to go and, no, what happens here? No, there's no nominations now because there's three people. So the three people who are left who didn't win the challenge will just automatically be nominated, and now Josh gets to vote for who is going to be eliminated. So essentially this next section is where we see everybody pitching to Josh about why they should be kept and why they shouldn't be voted out. So whoever gets voted out will go home, and the other two will be the final three with Josh. Yeah, so here right. Again, I think we see why Luke ends up being the eventual winner, because he just knows how to play every player in the way that they need to be played. He pitches to Josh that, you know, if I'm going to lose this, I want to lose to someone like you. So he's playing up to Josh's ego and, you know, building up his confidence, building up his gameplay, making him feel like he's a good player. That, again, is a signal to Josh where Josh should be saying, that kind of a sentence says that Luke thinks he can beat me, so I should be getting rid of Luke. But actually, Josh does what Luke anticipates, which is to feel flattered, to feel complimented, to feel a sense of loyalty to Luke and to keep Luke, which is exactly what Luke wanted to see. And this is where I think Luke is quite clever. He refers to talking about trying to make sure that the work he's done in the past in laying out the groundwork for these relationships pays dividends. And I think that is exactly what we see here, that he has spent quite a long time building this relationship with Josh, telling Josh that he's his number one, he's the ride or die, he's the one that he's going to take to the end. And so when it turns out that Josh is one who holds the power, that relationship is the reason why Josh brings Luke with him.
Yeah, absolutely right. We can see why Josh does take Luke at the same time as we are thinking, you've got to cut him, man, you've got to cut him, but he doesn't. Luke goes so far as to say he would be happy to lose to Josh. And that's what Josh hears. Josh hears lose to Josh. Oh, okay, all right, he's going to lose to me. That's not what we hear as viewers, but I don't blame Josh for having that loyalty and feeling the strength of the charm offensive from Luke Tokyo. I mean, Luke has been positioning Josh since, I think, the first episode. Josh was the perfect person to pick.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. I think that this was very, very clever play by Luke. Luke really set up this whole game for himself to win or to lose. He really, I think, that had Ellie won that challenge, I think Ellie would also have taken Luke with her. You know, she very much pictures to Josh that it's about effort. She's put in the most effort of all the housemates. She wants to sit in the top three with two other deserving winners, you know, that they have a friendship and respect for each other and that they've all played really hard. Again, all reasons to cut Ellie right here. Ellie should also not be taken to the final three because she's the only other person that I think was a threat to win. As much as I love Imogen, I don't think Imogen would have been a threat to win and she would have been a smarter person to take to the top three. But both Ellie and Luke know how to play Josh. And I would be interested to see in the future if we were to see a return of Josh or Ellie to this type of reality TV show, whether you might not see a different type of gameplay, one that recognises that when game can see game, you better get rid of that game.
Yes, I agree. I mean, it's interesting if the final three was actually going to pitch to a jury, one of the reasons to get rid of Ellie for Josh is that Ellie can say, I was on the chopping block four times and I survived. So, you know, so this would be a reason for Josh to get rid of her. They don't pitch to a jury directly, but these pitches to Josh are also pitches to us, the viewers who will be voting. Imogen said she lost everything, people used her, and that this would be her comeback. She's appealing to Josh's emotions, but I think by this point Josh is thinking about the game, who has played the game, what his alliance is, and that kind of mateship loyalty that we do see from some Australian male players of these reality games.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. It's sad to see Imogen go. I think she just has had such an amazing story arc. I'm a big fan. I will certainly be following her now in the real world as she moves on from her life outside of Big Brother. I'm very grateful we got to know something of who she was because, honestly, before she came into the game and the cast was announced, I did wonder, what is this girl doing here? She's only Kyle Sanderland's ex. But she's so much more than that. And I think the Imogen that we've learnt to know and love away from Kyle Sanderland's is far more interesting than any kind of stereotype we would get from a, you know, a New Idea or a Women's Weekly cover. And I'm fascinated to see where she goes. And I hope this newfound confidence lasts.
Oh, yes, me too. And I particularly like her. She's basically wearing straps for this elimination. She's wearing straps. Josh, it does take Josh aback and he looks at it and he tells her that she looks good, but you can see he's completely puzzled and wonders how it all holds together. It's the mystery of fashion, Josh. Imogen knows how to wield it. And off in the limo she goes wearing straps.
Well, they're not really straps. It's a new body suit with black bits of fabric, just in case anybody thought there was some very tricky and gravity-defying new form of body tape out there. It is a new body suit with black bits of fabric that are strategically covering the private bits. We'll post a picture of it on Twitter. Spoiler alert, this is going to be my fashions of the field winner for this week. I think it's not the sort of thing I would wear, but then again, I don't have the body nor the confidence that Imogen has, and I love that. Wear what you want, girl. You know, she really puts herself out there, and I think that is fabulous. In a world where we spend far too much time telling women what is or is not appropriate for them to wear, she gives a big fuck you to everybody and wears what she wants, and I think that is awesome.
I love that. So off she goes in her limo. I think there's some sadness. There are hugs all round. She gets into the limo. She says, I'm not scared of humans anymore. What an extraordinary statement.
Yeah, that's what I mean. So fascinating. Such an interesting person and so much going on there. Clearly so much trauma, but also so much heart and so much emotion. And, yeah, very, very keen to see where Imogen goes next. Imogen 2.0.
So let's go on to episode 11, styled as the finale. We start with extensive flashbacks of everything that we've already seen. The voting lines are still open. The final three crack open the champagne. And Ellie toasts everybody and says, we did it. It was 100% us.
Yeah, well, I think there is a strong argument to say that these are the three power players of the game this season. I mean, the major moves have come from – actually, no, that's not true. That's not true. Jess made a big move. Bernie made a big move. So, actually, no, that's not true. That's not true.
Sorry. It feels like it because they are the final three. It's like that idea of evolution where you say, so the horse is the peak of evolution. No, it's just the one that got through. And it's the same thing with this final three. Yes, they are all big players, but they have taken out some big players along the way. Luke tells Big Brother that he feels a little bit stronger and a little bit better looking now that he's in the final three. We must remember that he's always fallen at this point before, and this is something that we are going to hear more than once during this rather interminable episode. I'm not blaming Luke for it, but we are going to hear from Luke that a number of times that this is as far as he's got. This is further than he's got before. He can hardly believe it.
Yes. Now, I wanted to ask you, Sarah, in terms of voting in Big Brother non-VIP, is this how the winner is determined, by public vote?
Yes, it is, yes.
Okay, sure. So I'm not sure in the US if this is what happens, but in Australia certainly you had to register an email, which meant that essentially unless you were going to register multiple emails, you only got one vote. Whereas, you know, in the days of text messaging for instance, Australian Idol, you could send as many text messages as you're willing to pay for. Yeah, here basically one email, one vote.
Yes, I like that. I'm sure there are ways around it if you were completely determined.
Yeah, absolutely. So they're in the diary room, the three of them. They're celebrating and they receive a special FaceTime call. Who's it from?
It's from Caitlin. Caitlin lying back in her bed with a robe but a full face of makeup. And I love this because in the Big Brother house, she didn't necessarily have makeup on all the time. And many of the other women also didn't have makeup on all the time. And then there were moments where they all piled the makeup on after the evacuation to the backyard when they're all allowed back in. Luke did note that the girls are now reunited with their makeup brushes. But I loved Caitlin here in her glorious makeup. And then she said, well, I'm going to go to sleep now. And I thought, I think there might be some removal and moisturising before that. But it's wonderful. She says she misses them. They turn her around and Big Brother speaks to her and she says, oh, I've missed that voice.
Yeah, well, it is nice to see Caitlin here. It would have actually been nice to see maybe a Zoom with all the other old housemates, just see, a little two-second clip of each one of them, you know, wishing the final three good luck or something like that. But this whole episode feels very much like Channel 7 flogging the dead horse of the two international incidences that they tried to get international headlines for. And this is just the start of that. You know, we're just constantly inundated by more repeats of the Meghan Markle content, these apparently unseen, never seen before footage scenes that I have seen before online, of Caitlin delivering Hollywood celebrity goss about the Kardashians, about Ellen DeGeneres. It was unfortunate. I think there were other things that we could have looked at. Maybe we could have spent more time on Imogen's backstory, had a look at what some of the other contestants had done since they left the house. There were other options there, but they choose very much to focus most of this episode on Caitlin and on Tom Markle, and that's kind of where this episode really kind of stuck in my craw, as I think your mother would have said.
That's right. Sonia, even when we get to it, she opens the final ending bit by saying, you've made international headlines. I beg to differ. So we're going to get packages now and FaceTimes for each of the final three. This is fine. I mean, it took a lot of time, but I didn't begrudge the time because they are now quite deeply talking about their charities. Luke just wants to give back to Perth Children's Hospital because they saved his daughter's life. And then on the big screen, who should it be but Mrs. Luke, whose name is Mary, and their daughter Madeline. The boys are Lennox and Nate. They're not on this call. Loving him, sending him love. And, of course, he finds this a very emotional moment.
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, you would have to have a heart of steel not to be kind of melted by this story of Luke Tokey. And I think this is part of why he's such an audience and fan favourite. I mean, the story of this man who is a fly-in, fly-out worker, so wouldn't even get as much time with his kids as he potentially would want, to have two boys on the autism spectrum, then to leave a daughter to go and play a survivor for the second time, a daughter who is then diagnosed with cystic fibrosis, which is highly likely to be a terminal condition, is only going to deteriorate over time. You know, how can your heart not break for this guy? What an amazing, beautiful family he's got. What a pillar of strength Mary Tokey must be. And, you know, to see that little girl that you know was only going to get sicker and sicker, really, it was really, really heartbreaking, but also beautiful. She's so beautiful. She's so feisty and full of life. She's definitely had her signature on the whole series with that frozen suitcase that has sort of been in the background throughout from the first episode. If anyone does know anything about cystic fibrosis, and I can say certainly I was one who didn't, a couple of years ago I had to do a podcast called Beyond YOLO with young people in regional Australia, and we interviewed a young man who was 18 at the time who has cystic fibrosis, and he'd grown up with it, and about what it was like to have that condition, how it affected his life, and what adulthood was looking like for him, staring down the barrel of the fact that he was going to have to lose his whole support network because he was no longer a child. So he would not be able to go to the children's hospital. He couldn't have the same doctor because the doctor was a pediatrician. So he was having to move into an adult world where he would not be able to hold down a real job, not a real job, a full-time job. He would not be able to have a high-flying career. He might not be able to do the things that everyday people would just take for granted. So if that's something you're interested in, because certainly for me it was eye-opening and I did not know a whole lot about CF before I did that podcast. It's called Beyond YOLO. You can find it on all the normal places. And, yeah, there's an episode there where we talk about cystic fibrosis and a little bit of what the future might look like for little Maddie Tokey. So my heart definitely goes out to the Tokey family. They're just dealing with so much, but they do it so bravely, so positively, and really so selflessly in the way that he's there, so determined to raise money for the hospital. Awesome work.
Yes, thanks for telling us that, Amy. It is something to keep in mind about any person's story. You don't know until you sit down and talk to them, or in this case, until they go on national television and tell us.
Well, what great awareness as well. So, you know, that he's brought to CF and also to the autism spectrum disorder. It just really, it's a really clever way of bringing publicity to something without it being too in your face. And it's, I think, an example of a missed opportunity by this series to not shed more light onto the charities. We do hear a lot about the Australian Zoo and the World Wildlife Warriors that Ellie promotes. And I think that's because every time she talks about winning, she adds into the sentence, winning for my charity, Wildlife Warriors. So she's quite strategic about it. But I would have loved to hear a lot more about Josh's charity, Keith's Closet. I don't know anything about it. It sounded quite interesting and unique, and I would have loved to know more about it. But again, the show did not spend too much time discussing the charities, and I really feel that's a shame.
I would have liked to have met Keith. Keith's an actual person. He's a man who works with people who have mental illness, and he collects and has clothing in order to assist them to feel better about themselves, look smart, in the same way that the charity Dress for Success is a women's clothing charity. I've certainly donated suits there, which allows women to have clothing that's appropriate for perhaps office wear, that's a little smarter than they can if they can't afford it, or if they've had troubles, or if they're coming back from mental illness or homelessness or long-term unemployment. And Keith's Closet provides clothes to men who are suffering from mental illness and may have been on the downturn, may have been homeless, and it allows them to feel dressed well and able to face the world a little bit better. I'm assuming that Josh is involved with this because of his father's struggle with mental illness, but I don't know, because as you say, we really have heard very little about it. He's mentioned it a couple of times. I had to look it up online to find out what the details were. I would have loved to have met Keith.
Yeah, absolutely. I would also love to know, how do you give to that charity? Do you donate clothes? Do you just send money? You know, I think it's an inspired idea. I'm very motivated to find out more about it. So I wish the show had kind of given that to us on a silver platter.
Now, Ellie FaceTimes with her fiancé, Ross, and their dog, Daisy. We've met Daisy before, and there's Daisy again. I think Daisy's been to the groomer. Now, Ross proposed to Ellie on Saturday just past at Australia Zoo, and she said yes. This might have been prompted by the fact that in this moment she tells him that Caitlin has offered to walk her down the aisle. So I think now that they have that sorted, the proposal came, and we're very happy for both of them and wish them a long and happy life together.
Yes, I was thinking the Channel 7 PR team must have been most unhappy with this. Why couldn't he have proposed today, the day after the finale aired, to generate publicity for the show? He chose to propose on the day that she should have been campaigning and soliciting votes on social media, and so her social media feed was obviously taken up with the story of her engagement rather than the story of Big Brother and vote for the show and watch the finale. Never mind. Congratulations. You know, it'll be amazing to see Caitlin walking down the aisle towards Sonia Kruger, who will be one of the bridesmaids, standing there next to the rest of the bridal party.
Yes, Sonia inserted herself in that wedding as well. Now, Josh FaceTimes with his mum.
Yes, we see her for a grand total of about 2 seconds, and then we don't see her anymore. We don't really see any of that conversation. There's just a lot of stuff about Josh and his social anxiety, and we get to learn a little bit about his charity, not too much. But, yeah, poor old Josh's mum does not warrant much screen time in the eyes of the Big Brother producers.
Now, Big Brother has a surprise for them. It's one more challenge. Big Brother rather strangely says they're competing as friends now. I'm not quite sure how that works, but the prize for this challenge is $10,000 for their charity. It's in the backyard. It's, again, quite an extensive challenge, which I'll go through in a minute. But, Amy, why are we doing this challenge?
I don't know. Maybe they had $10,000 that they had to burn up before the end of financial year, and so they thought this was a good place to use it. I do not know. It was theoretically supposed to be an opportunity to win $10,000 on top, regardless of what the final result was. So, for instance, if somebody else had won the show, whoever won this challenge would have still gotten $10,000 for the charity. So from that perspective, I understand it, but why we're having a challenge at this point of the game, I don't know. Maybe also a filler.
Well, that's what I thought. As the voting's still open, perhaps it's to give people time to vote, give them more access to the final three.
Yeah, it's a strange one. It didn't really make any strategic sense, but there we have it. It was still a fun challenge to watch, very Survivor style and very physical, lots of hilarity.
Yes, they had to spin around in a chair, round and round and round and round and round and round till their legs could touch the ground. Then they had to pick up a long pole and knock down a trophy. The trophy was an eye with an Australian dollar sign painted on it, which I was pleased to see because the dollar bag challenge that we saw before had an American dollar sign painted on it. So I'm glad either somebody's woken up or it was just a coincidence. Then from there, they have to go into a chamber of freezing water. Now, it's like a horse trough full of ice with a bar over the middle, so they have to duck under that each time that they try one of five keys to unlock a chest. Only one of them works. Then the third trophy is hidden deep in a sand pile. They have to dig that out. Then they have three trophies. They stack them up on three shelves and knock them down with sandbags, very much a Survivor-style challenge.
Yeah, absolutely. This was very Survivor-style. And at one stage it seems like Ellie is going to win. Once again, she ends up passing Luke because she gets her key first and is digging furiously for what looks like several minutes before Luke can actually find the right key. So you kind of think that this is going to be a whitewash by Ellie, but Loki Toki proves once again why he is such a champion, you know, really pulls it out and ends up finding the trophy, throws the sandbags and wins the challenge. So you can see this is a guy who just has so much determination and passion for the game, so much drive. This is, I think, the second or third time we've seen him in a challenge where you think he can't win, and yet he just shifts into another gear and pushes himself beyond what anyone would really expect. So pretty amazing on his part. The flip side of that is Josh. He can't even stand being in the ice bath and quits the challenge. Lucky for him, this is Big Brother and not Survivor, because if Jeff Probst was there or Nico from Survivor South Africa, there would have been a whole lot of unhappiness expressed. But because it's Big Brother, not much is said, and, Josh quits the challenge.
Yes, he can hardly bear to duck his head under the water. They have to find one of five keys. Ellie's first key works. Luke, it is his fifth key that works. For Josh, I think ducking his head under the water is unbearable, and he drops out because he's cold. Big Brother lets that pass, let's say, in a way that perhaps other reality television game hosts would not. So the next thing we see is they're all dressed up. Now, I did say that we wouldn't see another man looking swept up, but in fact, Luke has a navy blazer over a black shirt, which is very nice. And here's my PSA, fellas, when you sit down, undo your jacket buttons.
Yes, that's why you see people do that.
But nonetheless, he looks very smart, as of course does Ellie.
Yeah, Ellie is rocking this kind of this sort of tangerine patterned dress with a plunging neckline, V-neck, and then these sort of gorgeous puff power sleeves. It's a little bit the pattern is a little bit giraffe inspired. Short skirt. She's always got the power pumps on. Looks stunning as always.
Now, unfortunately, Sonia asks them to go through each of their journeys, which we have just seen, literally, just during that episode. But first of all, we get the best diary room moments. I don't know if they were the best, but they consist mostly of Caitlin not being able to hear what Big Brother's saying, which I think is a little cruel. As you say, they show never-before-seen scenes. They have been before seen because they were on the Channel 7 website, but that's fine. For Ellie's journey, she thinks the other two are plonkers, which is such a great word. One thing we do see is Jessica telling the story about her sugar daddy, which I don't know what that's doing in the finale, because Jess has just spent 10 episodes revealing more of herself, revealing herself to be a smart, feisty, funny, interesting woman, and how the Big Brother editors chose to show her in her final moment was her talking about having a sugar daddy, which I thought was a bit of a betrayal of Jess there. Josh feels that he has played a really good game, he says to Sonia. He blacked out when he saw all the VIPs, but then he's really come good, and here he is in the final three. He's right to be proud of himself. There's an announcement that voting has closed. And then my notes say, get on with it. I wonder what I was meaning when I wrote that. An hour and 48 minutes into the hour and 50 episode.
Yes. Look, I don't have a whole lot to say about this section. As you say, it was a repeat of things we'd seen before. It was a disappointing reversion back to what we had seen at the start of the series, which was an unhealthy reliance on tabloid gossip about Hollywood, about Meghan Markle, stereotypes of these VIPs, which they had spent the whole season carefully undoing only to revert back to. It was very repetitive. The only two things I would note is, one, I feel extremely sorry for Ellie and Sonia, because while the boys get to wear jackets, it was so cold that you could see smoke coming out of their mouths. So clearly this was pre-recorded. The piped-in cheering didn't help add atmosphere. In fact, it felt quite fake. So I think it would almost have been better to have done this as maybe a Zoom and have it actually live yesterday or something else, because it was very, very contrived. And the only other thing I would say was it did interest me that at some point it was mentioned that Ellie would potentially have been the first woman in 13 years to have won a Big Brother had she won this. So It's a shame we didn't get that. It's a shame that, you know, that once again we have another male winner. But at the end of the day, I always said Luke Tokey was my favourite. He was the main reason for me to watch this. And so to see him finally crowned king of one reality TV show was very exciting, and certainly my Twitter feed exploded. I don't know what you thought about this, Sarah, but I certainly felt like the show indicated last night who was going to win. I do not know if it meant that they had three separate edits that they were airing based on what the votes were doing, but it certainly felt to me like there was a decided shift last night. Last week I talked about how I felt like there was a lot of focus on Ellie and Luke's charities, and so that was an indication they were going to be in the final two. And I think last night it was a very Luke-heavy episode. There was a lot of focus on Luke. And I, again, couldn't tell if it was just my social media, because particularly my Twitter is heavily curated for Survivor, because that is my favourite reality TV show. But I certainly felt like social media was resoundingly for Luke. Even though Josh and Ellie have large social media followings and are professional influencers, I felt like the general public was very much rallying behind Luke, even though Luke didn't really do too much to promote himself on social media, didn't do too much to ask people to vote. It felt very much to me like the whole community of people who had followed and donated money to Luke after Survivor went and specifically voted for him to win, because we knew how much the win would mean to him. What are your thoughts on that?
Yes, fans of Luke Tokey are fans of him through reality television competition shows. Fans of Josh and Ellie are fans of theirs through their modelling and other activities through Instagram. We did have some questions from Christy 0707 on Twitter. Is Luke Australia's most successful reality TV contestant? The other person that comes to his mind is Callum from MasterChef. So it depends what you mean by most successful. Certainly David Jennett is very successful, having, spoiler alert, won Survivor All-Stars, has had a presence on Celebrity Apprentice, the latest version. We did talk about the interaction between him and Lord Sugar, which was one of my favourite charm offensive meeting immovable objects of recent television. And I believe he did win a modelling competition many years ago. David's very successful in his own career. He walks for all sorts of labels. So I'm not sure what we're saying is successful. Going back to his question, most successful reality TV contestant. What do you say, Amy?
Yeah, I agree with you, Sarah. It all depends on the definition of that word success. I mean, if you're going to talk about legitimate longevity in the entertainment industry, there are hundreds of reality TV people who use reality TV to then get a platform to move on and be uber successful. I mean, look at Guy Sebastian, Adam Lior, Ho Ling. They all have, you know, additional TV shows, having won or been famous on seasons of reality TV. Then you get people like, you know, Angie Kent, who has appeared on multiple different reality TV shows. People like Sam Frost, who has then gone on to, you know, appear in Home and Away and has a legitimate acting career now. I think she's been a radio morning DJ as well. Or even Bindi Irwin. Bindi Irwin won Dancing with the Stars in the US, obviously very successful television star in her own right as well. So there are hundreds of people from reality TV who have gone on to have long-standing and very successful TV and entertainment careers. Probably in terms of winning, if we want to talk about success in terms of wins on the board, as in wins on a reality TV show, the other one I would say is Casey Donovan. I think Casey Donovan might be the only person to have actually won two reality TV shows. She won Australian Idol in the season where Anthony Kalia came the runner-up. Again, Anthony Kalia, very successful recording and touring artist now, quite a regular on Carols by Candlelight, so I'm sure we will see him again on Christmas Eve. But Casey Donovan, yeah, won Australian Idol and then also won I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here recently, like I would say within the last couple of years. So I don't know if she's potentially the only person to have won two distinctive and separate reality TV shows, as opposed to, say, Callum, who did win MasterChef, All-Stars, but only came runner-up in his original season, I'm pretty sure. I think he lost to Adam Lior. Is there anyone else you can think of, Sarah, who has won two reality TV shows?
I'm not thinking about winning, but in terms of career longevity, you have to go back to Chrissy Swan as well. Not a winner, but certainly someone who managed to turn it into a career. And I think the thing here with Luke is I don't know that this is his career to be on television. I think he is taking the opportunity now while his flame is running bright, while he has a fan base and people who want to see him. He is using these games because he really enjoys them, but also because he is playing very hard for his family while he has the spark. I don't know if it's a long-term, I could be wrong, I don't know if it's a long-term career that he either wants or is able to have. For our American viewers, if you're on Survivor, if you win, you get the money. There is no money for second, third, fourth, fifth place as there is in US Survivor, fifth, sixth, seventh, down or to the end. There's a sliding scale of money. In Australia, it's only the winner that gets paid. And the payouts are smaller. So it's, correct me if I'm wrong, Amy, but it's $500,000 for Survivor. $250,000 is also another prize amount that people get. MasterChef, I don't think it's even that much, but it is a good platform for selling your books and your opening your restaurant. And there are other advantages for being on the show that are not monetary.
Yeah, I think that's right. I do remember on Twitter a few months ago, I asked a question about how much for the number of days that they're playing, what is each contestant actually earning if you are the winner, given that Australian Survivor is so much longer, but the prize money is so much shorter. And, you know, season 41 of Survivor in the US is only like 26 days at the moment, but they're getting $1 million. So that is somewhere in my Twitter feed. I will endeavour to go and find it later on today and retweet it so that people can see the difference. But, yeah, you're right. In terms of longevity in entertainment, there are so many different people. Even as you were talking, I was thinking about Ricky Lee, who, you know, got quite deep into Australian Idol, didn't win, but we have seen on multiple different platforms since then. Robert Mills as well. Millsy's had a big career too. Even Blake was the first Big Brother contestant who then went on to a star in Neighbours. So there are just so many of them. But I think in terms of a contestant who's actually won more than one reality TV show, not within the same franchise, I feel like Casey Donovan might be the one.
And our final question, thanks everybody for sending in the questions over the period of time that we've been doing the podcast. It's been great to hear what it is that you want us to talk about. I certainly haven't read out every question that was sent in, so I'm sorry if that disappointed you, but I hope that you'll find we folded in our answers into the podcast to your interesting questions. But our last question, again, comes from Chris, and he asks, who from this cast would you like to see play again or play Survivor? And I think that's a great question.
Yeah, it is a great question. For me, it would be the finalists. I really love Ellie. I think she's a fascinating player. I think her only mistake really was towards the end where she was choosing to align with the boys instead of the girls. I think it would have been a smarter and a surer win to have aligned herself with the girls. And I think if she was to have her time over, she would play it quite differently. So I think if we were to throw Ellie into Survivor, you would see a very different kind of gameplay, something much more strategic, something much more cutthroat and less based on who deserves to be at the end, but more about who she could beat at the end. I think you would see something quite similar with Josh as well. I think it has been a really, really steep learning curve for Josh. I think now he would also have seen that his decision to bring Luke to the end is the reason why he lost the game. And so I think Josh would play bigger and more strategically and differently a second time round. I just don't know that Josh would survive on Survivor, given that he can't deal with a cold ice bath in the Big Brother house. And that is not a diss on my part. I don't play Survivor because I don't like camping and I don't like being cold. So I certainly wouldn't do the ice bath either. But in the context of reality TV, I think if you are struggling with being hungry and being cold on Big Brother, you have got no hope on Survivor. So as much as I would love to see Josh, I don't think it's likely we would see him playing Survivor.
Yes, I'd love to see Ellie on Survivor, as you've said. I'd like to see Josh on Apprentice. I think he could be very interesting playing on that platform with his experience now of having played on Big Brother, played with a fairly straight bat, as I think. I don't know anything about sports ball, but I think that's an expression. And having taken Luke to the end when perhaps he had the opportunity. Well, not perhaps he had the opportunity. He did have the opportunity to cut him and didn't do it. He certainly could turn to his friend Luke for some advice as to how to play the game. Although Lord Sugar was annoyed with David Jeanette for having strategy, I think there are ways to have strategy in Celebrity Apprentice. And I certainly enjoyed that season that we just had. I'm wondering about an Amazing Race pairing, if we could have Jess and Imogen run the Amazing Race together. I think that would be absolutely brilliant. They're already good friends. The complaints that would happen would be just hilarious. They would always be firm friends. They would have beef with other teams. They would have problems with breaking a nail. They would not be able to get to their makeup fast enough. And I envisage at least two times that they come to the mat last, but are told it is a non-elimination leg and they are still racing. I think they would be brilliant on Amazing Race, and I'd pay to see it. It is free to air. I would watch it free to air. I would pay my time to see that. I think that would be very, very good value.
Please don't jinx this. I already pay for so many streaming services. I do not need to pay for free-to-air as well.
Oh, no, sorry. Sorry about that.
I just told my kids that I'm cutting down one of our streaming services. I think we have four. They nearly had a heart attack. I'm like, we've got four. How much TV can you possibly watch?
This one's got that and that one's got that. Yeah, very much. I cut off my Apple TV just the other day. Sorry, Apple. Sorry, Amy, we won't get sponsored by Apple now that I said that. I have enough.
We'll all resubscribe when Ted Lasso 3 comes back.
Basically. I mean, I already spent enough money on their products. So overall, thoughts on the season. I enjoyed it far more than I thought I would. I became very engaged with all of the players, each of them, however I started with whatever attitude, charmed me, won me over, and took me through their journeys, however short, however long. I found their relationships very interesting and I thought well edited. The relationships were well edited. They showed us why these people were friends or alliances or bitter enemies or whatever it might be. So I think the cast was good, surprisingly, because when we read them in black and white, it was a little bit lackluster. But no, they turned out to be very good value. So I praise the cast. The design of the house is fantastic. I really loved the over-the-top red velvet canoodling room. I liked the design of the challenges very much. Sonia, I think, is such a great host. She gets my not only best on ground for these two episodes, but best of the entire season with her red snakeskin all-in-one bodycon dress. And again, her corseter is to be commended for that. So I like Sonia very much. But I have to say, production-wise, a little hit or miss for me. I kept disliking and then coming back to like production. And I think certainly these final two episodes really needed a trim. Perhaps they were still in lockdown and hadn't managed to get to the barber to get that good trim on those last two episodes. So I think overall, I would say I liked the season. I'm going to give the cast an A. I'm going to give the set design and production an A minus. The A minus is because of those awful green doonas. I don't know what they were doing. They looked really cheap in the middle of all that luxury. And I'm going to give production, let me see. I'm going to give production a B for the design of the game, but they lose marks with some very repetitive editing and shoving down our throat of two storylines, the Hollywood stories and the Tom Markle's half-sister story, two storylines we didn't want at the expense of storylines we did want. But, you know, would watch again.
Yeah, no, I agree with everything you said. I'm probably even a little bit lower on the editing and the production. I think this is 2021. Australia is an independent country. Why are we still dealing with this cultural cringe? the feeling that we need to get our content to make us viable and interesting and relevant from overseas. There is enough going on here that we do not need to know about what is happening overseas. Let's keep our content for our reality TV shows local. Let's use what we've got locally. These big stars like Omarosa and Caitlin and Tom Markle have got their own platforms they can use in the US. They don't need our small little pool of 20 million people here. Let's keep it local. If you're going to have it as an international season, that is a different thing. But if you're promoting this as Big Brother Australia, please let's keep it to Australians, Australian content, and let's not worry about irrelevant things that are happening in Hollywood, in the US, that actually happened 2 or 3 years ago and don't have any relevance to who we are as a society now. We're not interested. Just keep it to our local players. They do a great job as they are. And let's promote local talent.
Oh, well said. I like that a lot. Now, as we teased at the beginning, we had thought this would be our last episode, but in fact it's not, because we have an interview with the winner of Big Brother Australia, VIP, and that'll be coming up into your feed. Keep your eye out for it. We're very excited. We are, as we said, Luke fans here on this podcast.
I wish I had a bell so I could ding it now.
Ding!
Yeah, very, very excited to see Loki Toki on our podcast. So can't wait to speak to him once he's recovered from what I'm sure is a rocking hangover this morning.
Yes. So we'd like to thank Scott St. Pierre, who's behind the scenes at RHAP and helps put together all these awesome podcasts that you hear. The Podfather himself, Rob Sestanino, who has allowed the class of 2020 to branch out in all sorts of areas, and Amy and I are very grateful to be part of that expansion of the RHAP universe. We'd like to thank the patrons of RHAP because they allow these podcasts to happen. And if you're interested in becoming a patron and hearing about all the benefits that you get from that, you can go to robhasawebsite.com/patron. Amy, what do you have going on at the moment?
So as mentioned, if you want to learn a little bit more about cystic fibrosis, go to Beyond YOLO. There's a podcast there about that. There's only 4, so it'll be quite easy for you to locate. I've also got my Kids Pod podcast, if you've got kids under 12 that might be interested in that. Or you can follow me at Survivor Tragic on Twitter. I just talk a little bit about some of my children's books that are out and in the bookshops if you are looking for Christmas presents. And then you'll get my random thoughts on things to do with reality TV.
And you can follow me at Sarah Carradine. Well, for now, it's time to go. So we're going to say goodbye. Bye, Amy.
Bye.